Struggling to keep track of your story and world? Archivos is for you. More intuitive than a wiki, more extensible than Scrivener, Archivos builds your story bible into your personal, always-on tactical display. Graphical relationship charting, continuity tools, this thing has it all, with bonus options for fan engagement and real-time collaboration. I don't recommend tools I don't use, guys, and this one is good enough that even Open Source Me is using it for one of his projects instead of my trusty old wiki. Archivos. Story world management done right. www.archivos.digital. That's www.archivos.digital. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 761.
Today, Mark asks,
what are the best tenses in which to tell different types of stories? I find that the past tense gives certain stories a layer of automatic believability, especially if those stories are fantastic or very different from real life. I was thinking about why and wondered if it was because when we tell stories to one another in real life, we usually use past tense because we're almost always relating things that have already occurred. We very rarely have something interesting happen to us and then tell someone about it in present tense. One exception is that when we're trying to get the reader or listener to be in our shoes in a particular moment, we drop into a present tense like, so there I am, sitting at the bank, right? And this guy in a mask walks, and this guy in a mask walks in. Here, it seems clear that the present tense accentuates the momentary significance of the experience, whereas a past tense version, so there I was at the bank when a guy in a mask walks in, accentuates the eventual outcome of the story. Past tense seems to make us wonder, then what happened? And present tense makes us wonder, what was it like moment to moment? So, is that true? Is it that simple? What default assumptions about tense do you work from, and how do they diverge or not from that basic understanding? Also, thank you for doing the podcast, and best of luck writing and living in 2020.
Oh, thank you, Mark. I may need it. Hey, we've got coronavirus going around, so living might be optional. However, writing is not optional. I have made provisions in my will to continue writing from my grave. I don't know how it's going to work, but I have figured out how to make the pen move using my dead hands. Now I've just got to figure out how to feed it a story with a dead brain. One step at a time. Okay, so, you're on to something with how tense works. Those are some good observations, but I'm going to differ from you a little bit on a few minor points that might make a huge difference. You'll notice that present tense is usually reserved for thrillers, literary fiction, and personal anecdotes. And I think there's a very good reason for this. Whereas the past tense gives you a sense of solidity about what's happening. I mean, you know that whoever's talking to you may be lying to you, but you also know that they are attempting to share with you something that has happened. There's an underlying sense of genuineness about it, thoughtfulness, of certainty, of they know what they're trying to convey, so what they're saying is important. With present tense, the uncertainty of the speaker is highly accentuated. They don't know what's going to be important to tell later, so they are sharing the moment-to-moment experience with you, and that accentuates your uncertainty as an audience. It's not so much that the past tense makes you ask, then what happened? And the present tense makes you ask what's going to happen. Those are both always in play in both tenses. What I think is going on is that the past tense makes you pay attention because you know the information you're being conveyed is important. And the present tense makes you listen because you don't know which information that's being conveyed will be important. So you don't have that baseline assumption of trust, and that accentuates the uncertainty of the reader in the endeavor. And it does this by also accentuating the uncertainty of the point of view character. It is not a shock, not nearly so much of a shock, in a first-person present tense story to have the narrator just die. The narrator could die, could get blacked out, no problem. You sort of know that could happen because it's being told in present tense. We don't know when we're going to die. The narrator doesn't know when he's going to die. So you can actually just kill your narrator right in the middle of a scene and then switch to an external point of view that documents what happened after that, or you can hop to another person's first-person present tense point of view or whatever. When a narrator speaking in the past tense dies, whether you're first person or you're close third person, that's a shock. Because that means the narrator is speaking to you from beyond the grave. And that opens up a whole new set of things that you weren't necessarily assuming were in play in this world. If you do that, it also lends a weird sense of credibility because even though in the real world, the dead are incredibly unreliable, seeing as how they evidently choose to speak only through priests and con artists, in fiction, the dead are incredibly reliable because they have no vested interest in anything other than what happened, and perhaps in ensuring their position in the afterlife or in the minds of the people they've left behind. So there are different effects on audience credibility and certainty with the choice of past tense or present tense. And you'll notice also that people who are crazy, point of view people who are crazy, and I do mean actually like delusional crazy, who are crazy or who have personality disorders that really, really affect the unreliability of the narrator, like borderline, like schizophrenia, like paranoid delusional, like multiple personalities, that kind of thing. And narrator with those kinds of things going on, you can get away with a lot more of that in the present tense without telegraphing to the audience to expect this kind of reveal than you can with the past tense. Partly because of audience expectations, but partly because the present tense gives you access to more tricks that solidify the experience of being in that kind of delusional or pseudo-delusional state. With the past tense, the implied level of deliberation gives you a slight remove from those delusional or pseudo-delusional states. So your unreliability in a past tense narrator calls more into question the conscious honesty of the narrator and less the narrator's actual perceptual faculties. And that's why I think that present tense is much more common in literary fiction, and I didn't mention horror, but it's actually fairly common in horror as well, in literary fiction and horror, because literary fiction and horror tend to deal in main characters who are, to some degree or another, nuts. Literary fiction is a genre, is about immersing yourself in perspectives that don't necessarily make rational sense, and finding the emotional sense and discovering the sense-making apparatus of that person's world. And horror is frequently, especially Lovecraftian horror and mental horror, is frequently about the experience of losing one's sanity, because that's something we all fear. We all have moments where sanity feels like this precious gift that's about to slip away because we're being pushed beyond what we think we can handle. So going into the head of someone for whom sanity is a distant memory, if it's a memory at all, can be amazingly terrifying. And pushing that experience down to the level of forcing us to live the delusional state in present tense is incredibly unnerving. So literary fiction uses it as an empathy device in a positive sense, and horror uses it as an empathy device in a, not so much a negative sense, in the sense that negative is judgmental, but in a horrifying sense. It's not meant to make us feel good about the person or to sympathize with the person who's having these delusional states. It's meaning to horrify us at what they're going through. So it's a darker kind of empathy. So that's what I think is going on. And of course, in Thriller, it's emphasizing the moment-to-moment uncertainty that the main character is always in, because thrillers are all about uncertainty. That is really, genuinely the only emotion that makes a thriller work, is uncertainty. Everything else in a thriller is optional, but uncertainty is not. So on that incredibly uncertain note, thanks for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty McKeon, and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.
Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.